Night, a spectacular last night of the proms, featuring the violinist Nicola Benedetti, the tenor Joseph Calleja, and of course, Elgar Parry and Henry Wood. The last night of the BBC proms, live here on BBC Radio 3, tonight from 7:30.
We're broadcasting on 90 to 93 FM on digital radio. You can also listen to us live online in high-definition sound. In a couple of minutes, today's early music show. Now, though, at 1 o'clock just gone, the news read by Vaughan Savage.
Police investigating the murder of a British-Iraqi family in the French Alps are beginning to search their home at Claygate in Surrey. French detectives are being assisted by officers from the Surrey Force. Saad al-Hilli, his wife, a woman thought to be her mother, and a passing cyclist were all killed on Wednesday. The couple's two daughters survived, and relatives have gone to France to be with them. Police in Italy and Switzerland are also looking for a vehicle which police believe may have been used in the attack. The Department of Health says a new health minister's comments about assisted suicide are her personal views and not those of the department. Anna Soubry told The Times that the laws on assisted suicide were ridiculous and it was appalling that British people had to go abroad to end their life. BBC News has confirmed that Tony Blair was involved in negotiations to merge the commodities company Glencore and the mining firm Xstrata. The multi-billion pound deal had seemed to be breaking down but was reignited on Thursday. Mr Blair's office had denied he was involved. At least six people, some of them children, have died in a suicide bomb attack in the Afghan capital Kabul. The blast happened close to the headquarters of the NATO-led international forces. The Anglican Communion, which represents the world's 38 independent Anglican churches, has rejected suggestions there are imminent plans to create a presidential figure to help the Archbishop of Canterbury run the organisation. In an interview with the Daily Telegraph, Dr. Rowan Williams said such a figure could help with the growing demands of the church. At the Paralympics, David Stone, who has cerebral palsy, has successfully defended his cycling road racing title with victory at Brands Hatch. Great Britain remains in second position in the medals table with 33 gold medals. The weather, there'll be warm sunshine for much of England and Wales throughout the afternoon. It'll be cloudier in the north with patchy rain in the west and more persistent rain for the Northern Isles. The BBC News and Weather at 3 minutes past one.
And it was read by Vaughan Savage. Well, time now on Radio 3 to join Lucy Skeeping for today's early music show, which begins with an extract from one of the best-known 19th century novels.
Anne of Austria was then 26 or 27 years of age. That is to say, she was in the full splendour of her beauty. Her carriage was that of a queen or a goddess. Her eyes, which cast the brilliancy of emeralds, were perfectly beautiful, and yet were at the same time full of sweetness and majesty. Her mouth was small and rosy, and although her underlip, like that of all princes of the House of Austria, protruded slightly beyond the other, it was eminently lovely in its smile, but as profoundly disdainful in its contempt. Her skin was admired for its velvety softness. Her hands and arms were of surpassing beauty, all the poets of the time singing them as incomparable. Lastly, her hair, which from being light in her youth had become chestnut, and which she wore curled very plainly and with much powder, admirably set off her face, in which the most rigid critic could only have desired a little less rouge and the most fastidious sculptor a little more fineness in the nose.
Thank you. Welcome to the show, and two opening pieces by the 17th century Italian composer Luigi Rossi. Sinfonia, followed by the aria Vaghi Rivi from Il Palazzo Incantato, The Enchanted Palace, one of many operatic settings of Ariosto's Orlando Furioso. The performers were the group La Peggiata, led by Cristina Pluha, and we're going to be hearing them all through the programme, highlights from a concert they gave in France last year. But what about the reading we heard first of all? Well, maybe you recognised it. It's from one of the most famous novels of the 19th century, The Three Musketeers by Alexandre Dumas. And it describes the youthful Anne of Austria. Of course, Dumas was writing some 300 years after the grand lady's death. But in today's programme, we're exploring some of the Italian composers whose music was particularly popular at Anne's court in Paris. But why was Italian music so much a feature of the French court at this time? Well, the answer lies not so much with Anne herself, who in spite of her name was actually a Spanish princess, but with France's powerful chief minister, Cardinal Mazarin. Anne was the wife of Louis XIII, and when he died in 1643, his son and heir, Louis XIV, was still only 4 years old, so Anne, his mother, became the regent. Naturally, she called upon Mazarin for advice and support, and for some 10 years, the two worked closely together as rulers. Too close, some felt, and there were even rumours that they were lovers. But Mazarin's influence went much further than politics. Italian-born as Giulio Mazarini, he wanted the young Louis to grow up with Italian taste, and he began importing the music of some of the very best Italian composers of the time into the French court. Luigi Rossi, whose music we've just heard, soon became a favourite, as did Cavalli. And, of course, a little later, the most famous musician of the mature Louis XIV would be another Italian, one Jean-Baptiste Lully. Even the music of a woman composer was acceptable, just as long as she was Italian. And when it was a song as enchanting as the one we're going to hear now, well, the royal party, as they sat and listened or chatted quietly over a game of cards after dinner, they must have been delighted. This is La Peggiata with Barbara Strozzi's gorgeous Che si può fare? What can one do if the rebel stars have no pity? What can be done if heaven has no peace to soothe my sorrows?
Thank you.
Such was the state of affairs at the very moment we introduced our readers to the study of Cardinal Mazarin, once that of Cardinal Richelieu. We have seen in what state of mind he listened to the murmurs from below, which even reached him in his seclusion, and to the guns, the firing of which resounded through that room. All at once he raised his head, his brow slightly contracted like that of a man who has formed a resolution. He fixed his eyes upon an enormous clock that was about to strike 10, and, taking up a whistle of silver gilt that stood upon the table near him, he shrilled it twice. A door hidden in the tapestry opened noiselessly, and a man in black silently advanced and stood behind the chair on which Mazarin sat. "Benoît," said the cardinal, not turning round, for having whistled, he knew that it was his valet de chambre who was behind him. "What musketeers are now within the palace?"
"The black musketeers, my lord."
"Is there any officer belonging to this company in the antechamber?"
"Lieutenant D'Artagnan."
"A man on whom we can depend, I hope."
"Yes, my lord."
"Give me a uniform of one of these musketeers and help me to put it on."
The valet went out as silently as he had entered, and appeared in a few minutes bringing the dress demanded. The cardinal, in deep thought and in silence, began to take off the robes of state and to attire himself in the military coat, which he wore with a certain degree of easy grace owing to his former campaigns in Italy. When he was completely dressed, he said,
"Send hither Monsieur D'Artagnan."
L'arpeggiata, with music from Italian composers heard at the French court during the mid-17th century. An aria by the composer and castrato singer Giovanni Bontempi. And before that, two arias by Luigi Rossi, from the cantata Gelosia and from his opera Il Palazzo Incanto. And earlier on, we heard a song from the pen of one of the very few named female composers of the Baroque era, Barbara Strozzi. As for the little literary vignette we heard in between about the cunning Cardinal Mazarin, that was an excerpt from Dumas' sequel to The Three Musketeers, a novel called 20 Years Afterwards. It's set in the period when Cardinal Mazarin and the Regent Anne of Austria were in charge of France, and when Luigi Rossi was invited to Paris. I say invited, but any invitation from Mazarin was probably more like an order. He and Anne were a powerful double act. Everyone noticed it at the time, and as we'll hear in the next reading, so did Alessandre Dumas some two centuries later. But first, some more from Rossi, his Balo from the opera Il Palazzo Incantato.
"My lord, have you any commands?" asked Bernouin. "Yes, yes," replied Mazarin. "Light me. I am going to the queen." Bernouin took up a candlestick and led the way. There was a secret communication between the cardinal's apartments and those of the queen, and through this corridor Mazarin passed whenever he wished to visit Anne of Austria. In the bedroom in which this passage ended, Bernouin encountered Madame de Beauvais, like himself entrusted with the secret of these subterranean love affairs. And Madame de Beauvais undertook to prepare Anne of Austria, who was in her oratory with the young king, Louis XIV, to receive the cardinal. Anne, reclining in a large easy chair, her head supported by her hand, her elbow resting on a table, was looking at her son, who was turning over the leaves of a large book filled with pictures. This celebrated woman fully understood the art of being dull with dignity. It was her practice to pass hours either in her oratory or in her room without either reading or praying. When Madame de Beauvais appeared at the door and announced the cardinal, the child, who had been absorbed in the pages of Quintus Curtius, frowned and looked at his mother. "Why," he said, "does he enter without first asking for an audience?" Anne coloured slightly. "The Prime Minister," she said,
is obliged in these unsettled days to inform the Queen of all that is happening without exciting the curiosity or remarks of the court.
An aria from Giovanni Bontempi's opera Il Parid, written in 1662. Both that and Ross's Ballo, we heard before the reading, were the kind of pieces that featured prominently at the French court, where Cardinal Mazarin and Anne of Austria were not only running the country, but keeping an eye out for the cultural tastes of the young Louis XIV. The performers there and all through today's programme are L'Arpeggiata, a highly accomplished French-based ensemble that specialises in lesser-known works of the Renaissance and early Baroque. All of them, singers and instrumentalists alike, are very versatile. Their director, Christina Pluha, herself plays theorbo, harp and Baroque guitar. And just listen up for the trumpet solo in the first aria in this next set, Son Ruinato, I Am Ruined. Al Suave Spira by Luigi Rossi. And before that, the aria Son Ruinato by Benedetto Ferrari. I don't know what the Three Musketeers might have made of music like this, but it certainly contains some of their famous swagger and panache, as portrayed by Alessandra Dumas in the readings that we've been hearing. Well, as L'Arpeggiata approached the end of their concert, the musical temperature appreciably heated up. And as you'll hear, the audience adored this final piece by Luigi Rossi, Si tocchi tamburo. Luigi Rossi's Si tocchi tamburo, bringing to an end the concert of Italian music from the court of Anne of Austria, performed by L'Arpeggiata. But as you can hear, there's no way they were getting away without an encore. And so for our last music in today's show, L'Arpeggiata give us one of the most famous pieces of Italian music from the entire 17th century, the duet Pur ti miro that concludes Monteverdi's Coronazione di Poppea. Never mind that scholars these days dispute whether this icing on Poppea's cake was actually composed by Monteverdi or not. We can still sit back and wallow in its sensuality. The soprano Raquel Andueza and the mezzo Luciana Mancini with L'Arpeggiata.
Thank you.
Por ti miro from Monteverdi's Coronazione di Poppea. The singers were Raquel Andwether and Luciano Mancini with L'Arpeggiata. And it ends today's early music show. It was presented by Lucy Skeeping and produced in Salford by Sam Phillips. Well, looking ahead on Monday night here on Radio 3, Philippe Hervéger conducts the period instrument Orchestre des Champs-Élysées and his Collegium Vocale Ghent in a spiritually themed programme recorded at this year's Edinburgh International Festival. Bruckner's monumental yet serene final symphony left unfinished at his death. His ninth symphony is coupled with his massively scored Te Deum, which Mahler described as written for the tongues of angels, heaven-blessed, chastened hearts, and souls purified in the fire. The concert opens with Brahms' powerful choral meditation based on a Goethe text about the fate of man. That's the concert from the Edinburgh Festival from 7:30 this coming Monday night.
Piano Season on the BBC.
Murray Pariah, Andras Schiff and Mitsuko Uchida. Leeds laureates from years gone by, but who will follow in their footsteps this year? On BBC Radio 3, live coverage of the climax of the 2012 Leeds International Piano Competition. A weekend of piano music from six finalists chosen from more than 60 competitors from all over the world. Over two nights, each of the finalists perform a concerto with the Halle Orchestra and Sir Mark Elder. And on Sunday afternoon, you can hear them in recital. But our coverage begins on Thursday night with the story so far from the 2012 competition. Join us at 7:30 here on BBC Radio 3.
And the piano very much in the picture now. It's just gone 2 o'clock and another chance now to hear Monday's lunchtime Proms Chamber Music Concert. It was given at Cadogan Hall in London and presented by Clemency Burton Hill.
Hello and welcome to Cadogan Hall for the denouement of this year's Proms Chamber Season. We've been celebrating the 150th anniversary of Claude Debussy's birth across the Proms this year, and we draw the Chamber Series to a close this lunchtime with a real gem, solo piano music from one of Debussy's compatriots and arguably one of the world's foremost interpreters of his work, Pierre-Laurent Aimard. Now, Debussy, Aimard says, was the first composer whose music really overwhelmed him as a child, and as an artist for whom the pleasures of sonority, of musical aesthetics, have only increased in importance, he's described Debussy as a hedonist of sound, appreciating his deep intensity, soft sensuality, and incredible precision. But for Aimard, it's not only the refined luminosity of Debussy's sonic world, but his radical complexity, his darkness, if you like, that's also very compelling. And we'll hear some of the more enigmatic and destabilizing elements of Debussy's music this lunchtime, particularly in the latter part of today's prom, when Aimard will perform the second book of Debussy's Preludes, a work which has never before been heard at the Proms and which he's recorded in full for release later on in this anniversary year. Well, before the Preludes, we'll hear two extraordinary vignettes, Debussy's Elegie and Masque. And I was talking to Pierre Laurent not so long ago, and he was telling me Debussy's so often thought of as this impressionistic character, but he's also a very profound and dark, deep artist. He says that these pieces really show his dark side. To begin this Proms Chamber recital, we're going to start with the composer's final known work, Les Soirs illuminés par l'ardeur du charbon, or Evenings Lit by Glowing Coals. The work surfaced just over a decade ago, with a rather compelling narrative alongside it, apparently during the extremely harsh wartime winter of 1916-17, Debussy's coal merchant, one Monsieur Tronquin, managed to slip the Debussy household some precious extra fuel, and as thanks, he received the beautiful manuscript of this piece just a few months later. Well, that sounds like rather a good deal to me. To perform Les Soirs illuminés par l'ardeur du charbon, please welcome to the stage Pierre-Laurent Aimard.